Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. I want to welcome our audience again joining us on the radio dial, WYAD 94.1 FM. We also welcome those joining us in Atlanta at 106liveradio.com, in D.C. at dcnowradio.com, and, of course, those joining us through blogtalkradio.com as well. Joanna L. Croats is making her first appearance on our program today. She's the author of the book, Being Equal Doesn't Mean Being the Same, Why Behaving Like a Girl Can Change Your Life and Grow Your Business. We're going to talk to Joanna not only about what it's been like for her to be able to inspire women entrepreneurs, but also to encourage them to be able to do what it is that they love, and of course to show them ways that they can be successful at it. If you're just now hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Joanna, hello to you and welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. You know, I read this book with a lot of interest because it's one of those things that I think that we know unfortunately happens, but we don't always address it. You've been able to address it in a way, I think, that it is not only inspiring, but I think really does show, and particularly with women, you know, what they can do and why they should not be afraid to do it, to go after what it is that they want and to be able to make those dreams a reality. What has it been like for you, first of all, Joanna? Because I noticed in prepping for this segment that you have definitely inspired so many people. What has it been like for you to be an example for others as to what's possible for them?
Well, it's kind of you to say that. I think it's been a long journey for me. I had a pretty successful career as a national magazine editor for a couple of decades, and very different kinds of magazines, one a lifestyle magazine, one a business magazine, one a small business magazine. And I continually felt that I didn't quite fit in. And I thought, you know, it's my problem. I didn't get along in kindergarten, or I didn't figure out how to play in the sandbox, you know, and it's somehow my personality. And little by little, when I started my own business, so I've seen it from both sides, the challenges of being an owner and an entrepreneur and as a journalist looking from the other side, I started interviewing small business owners as a columnist for Microsoft. And it became clear to me that it wasn't just me. So I had the emotional anecdotes and the emotional side of the equation. And then as I started interviewing dozens and dozens of business owners, from startups to mezzanine-style companies owned by men, owned by women, people of all ages, people across the country and Canada, and it became clear that the metrics spoke to my emotions as well. And that is that men and women are simply different. And it's not a PC thing to say. I mean, the subtitle of my book, Why Behaving Like a Girl Can Change Your Life, is meant to be provocative. So I was trying to hit that controversy head on.
Exactly. And you've been able to do it not only through your own experiences, Joanna, but also through research. I mean, you have done a lot of research, and you share quite a bit of that in this book. One of the interesting things that you discuss in the book that I thought was interesting in the chapter Future, Embrace the She Economy or Be Left Behind, you talk about the shift that is happening. And this is what you wrote. Likewise, the number of women investing in other women, though still relatively small, is rising in the U.S. Wealthy women philanthropists no longer routinely donate to the arts of the United Way, but instead support causes and organizations that help women build lives and thrive, such as Women for Women International, a global nonprofit that aids women survivors of war and conflict. What has it been like for you through your research to see the shift and to be able to see that, even though you say it's still something that is slow, as a lot of progress sometimes in this country can be, it is something that is happening and being recognized?
Well, now you come to the part where I talk about putting on the big girl pants. I think women need to put on their big girl pants. The women have extraordinary wealth now in this country, not all women, of course, but compared to previous generations, and also they're in control of it, as opposed to, say, a couple of centuries or a century ago, when all money and all wealth and all patents, by the way, no matter what women invented, belonged to the man of the family. So I think women have extraordinary muscle, and it doesn't come down just to dough. It comes down to being in charge of your life. And yet women are not stepping up. I mean, philanthropy is not about the zeros in your bank account. It's only about making a decision to step over the threshold and make a difference. And women are generally a little shy about that. They don't like the limelight. They don't like to pull the trigger on big gifts. They tend to, and this is a good thing, they tend to dot I's and cross T's, but then men will just step across that threshold. Okay, what do you want? We'll do it. And women are like, wait a minute, I'm not quite sure yet. So that's, and there are reasons for this, obviously, sociological,
right,
cultural, political, emotional. I mean, I'm not criticizing so much as saying, okay, just step forward and you'll find that the journey is easier. And I know it from my own life. I still have lots of fears. You know, I'm trying to go out and develop a speaking platform about these issues, and every time I open my mouth, I'm like, oh, my God, oh, my God. So you have to say to yourself, what is the larger issue? I know. For instance, Christian Gillibrand, who's a senator in New York State, who speaks to a lot of women's issues as well as, for instance, rape in the military, that she's been trying to get a law passed. She talks about how difficult it's been to her for her to ask for money for her campaigns, for fundraising as a politician. And she said only until it became clear to her that she was doing this for the issues, not to give money to herself, was she freed up to say, okay, please donate to my campaign. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say as well.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting when you mentioned about the big girl pants. I had made a note. It's so funny. And we had not talked about this.
No, we haven't.
No, but in the chapter Threats, Why Woman Can't Be a Man, you talk about Ashley Swartz there. You mentioned New York, she being the founder and CEO of Furious Corporation. She said there, the quote that you have from her, I'm the one who takes the responsibility by putting on my big girl pants and dealing with it. Your path to resolving such behavior has a lot to do with the kind of woman you are and your personality. I don't think there's any right answer, but it does affect your business. Do you think that one thing that is helping, though, Joanna, and again, as you said, you know, it is a process, but is that there's more examples out there of it working, and that, you know, and that allows some women to be able to look at that and maybe have less fear because they're seeing other women actually going out there and making things happen in the world?
Well, for sure, except I think the pace is just glacial. It makes me impatient. We're still 80 cents on the male dollar for women, and it's been there for, I don't know, the late 90s. Actually, it dropped a penny in the last couple of years. We still have, 4%, 5% of women CEOs in the Fortune 500. And similarly, worldwide with companies, with multinationals that make major dollars. And yet study after study, especially in the last month, has just come out showing that when women are in positions of power and decision-making in startups and in corporations, they're more likely to thrive. And this comes from prestigious studies like McKinsey & Company and Peterson Institute of Economics and Ernst & Young. So there's bias out there. When you talk about the angels that are coming to the fore and backing women-led companies, I'm delighted on that. But the numbers, in 2012, there were 13% of the 317,000 angel investors in this country, 13%, about a little over 1 in 10, who were women. In 2014, that had doubled. So, wow, that's a huge rise. But that means it went up to 26%. Of the 317,000.
Yeah.
And of those, not all of them are backing women-led companies. It just means they're female investors. So the women who are applying for angel investing to networks and affluent individuals who are seed funding these kind of companies is still, I don't know, about 10%. Not huge. Something is about, I think, a combination of gender bias. The big girl pants image for me is also telling women to get out there and hang out with the men. Don't get into the girl ghetto. Don't only hang out with women networks. Go where the boys are. That's where the money is. That's where men will see that women are leaders. And I think it's optics and it's narratives and it's metrics that will change the equation.
Right. And I want to get into some of the questions that you raise in the book for sure. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Joanna L. Croats is our guest for this segment. We're talking to her about her new book, Being Equal Doesn't Mean Being the Same, Why Behaving Like a Girl Can Change Your Life and Grow Your Business. And again, if you're just hearing about the book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can be able to find out more information about it yourself. You raise some questions in the book, and I am a very optimistic individual, Joanna. I agree with you, and you even address in the book that even some of the others that you interviewed in the book, you talk about how slow change has been, and maybe it is not moving at the pace. And you also, of course, look at the questions that are out there in the chapter Money, Passion, Independence versus Risk and Rewards. You talk about some of these under the subheading Social Consciousness and the Gender Gap. And three of the questions that I'll mention here that I want to talk about why you say the jury is still out on is, can women fuel both change and the economy? Can they transform the nature of business and make the triple bottom line a more common goal? Most of all, will socially conscious ventures work to bridge the many gender gaps in equality, in finances, in politics? Those three questions, why is it that you want readers to know that the jury is still out on those, and those are still answers that have to come?
Well, it's a nuanced kind of discussion, and I appreciate how carefully you've been looking at the work that I put into this. So there's always this cliche out there that women are somehow more empathetic, more communicative, more softer, and that has worked for and against them. You know, the woman behind the man and the power behind the throne, it kind of gives women this slightly nefarious, slightly weird kind of influence. And I think it's when they step into the limelight, they come into a lot of static and a lot of conflict. And they're seen as, I don't know, if they're philanthropists and they have a bunch of money, they're seen as trophy wives or greedy or bitchy or whatever. You know, it's a tricky role for women. So that big girl pants image comes with a lot of baggage as well. And then the question is, how would women behave if they have total parity? It is, study after study shows that women tend to have more social entrepreneurship businesses than men do. They tend to get into business because, and studies have shown this from the Small Business Administration, men tend to start a business because they want to make dough and they want to grow big. Women tend to start a business because they have a purpose. They want to make a product that is fabulous, or they're looking for work-life balance. So we get this size versus satisfaction argument, one more time, dichotomy. And all of that is, are women going to change the world if they have the power? That's why the jury's out. We don't know what happens when women get into positions of power, if they'll behave actually differently. We've seen a little bit about it. I mean, when the government shut down in 2013, it was the guys in Congress who shut it down. It was women senators who opened it up again and restarted it. And that was a bipartisan coalition of Republican and Democratic senators. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that when women get put in charge, it was women in Liberia who ended the Civil War. That was grotesque and awful. It is women who seem to be better at, I don't know, not getting into conflict. On the other hand, I've seen women carry a grudge much more than men do. They don't forget it, a slight. Men are like, okay, I'm moving on. Women are, I'll never forget what she did to me. So, you know, it's not like women are perfect and men are not. And I talk about something at length that I call the gender toolbox. We need to learn from each other. I'm just really advocating for true diversity, which is that everyone is different and yet not inferior in any way. And too often diversity means behaving like the white male power structure. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, you mentioned the optimism. I think that is the thing. I mean, for so many people, Joanna, and you know this better than I do, that unfortunately there are people who become so impatient. They're like, you know, what's the use? You know, it's not going to change, or, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this thing, and they give up. You know, have you found that part of the reason why you have been so vocal, part of the reason why maybe you even wrote this book, is so women do not become jaded, that they do not become pessimistic and don't give up hope of what they can do?
Well, yes, and what I've tried to do, and it's been a little tricky because some people are in favor of what I've tried to do and some people are not so hot. I tried to lay out an argument that says, look, these are the things that haven't been working. For 50 years, more than that, women have been coming into the workplace, and we still have the gender gap, and we still have all these few women in positions of leadership. And yet there has been a woman astronaut, there are women on the Supreme Court. I mean, all those things balance each other out. But I feel like if I have to wait longer for everything to really come to parity. So, for instance, a McKinsey and Company study said that women will reach parity in the C-suite, in the CEO suite, by the year, wait for it, 3015. 3015. And as a 100 years from now. And as a result, I figure if we can get more women forming their own companies and having more satisfaction in their lives, because, again, studies show when women are in charge of their own company, they feel better about themselves and their families and their work, then we will accelerate that process, because society and CEOs who are male and recruiters who are male will see that women are leaders and they lead differently. I'll give you an example. When a woman is promoted to a position over a male rival, typically, not every case, but typically, she will turn that rival into an ally. She will become more collegial. She will keep that person on board. And isn't that smart? You know, there's institutional memory. There's someone who is clearly talented or wouldn't have been in the running in the first place. Men tend to cut their rivals off at the knees, and the guy has to leave the company. And so people above that level, the male leaders above that level, see the woman making an ally out of the male rival, and they think, oh, she's weak. She doesn't have the stuff to be she's not tough enough to be a leader. I just think it's weaker to get rid of that guy than to say, you know what, I'm going to keep this guy around. I'm going to make him work with me, as opposed to leave the company and go elsewhere and take his talent and smarts and hostility somewhere else. So, but this is not seen as leadership by male leaders. They don't have that kind of sensibility that women do. Women also tend to be more open-minded about teams. They will lead in a way that lets people come forward with bold ideas, doesn't make them feel bad about it. And so, again, men think, well, they're not being tough enough. You know, they're not the standards for performance have dropped. You know, it just, there's a whole mess of that stuff. And what I've tried to do in the book is say, these are the hurdles, but be true to yourself. Launch a business, because I think it's the best path in this time, at this station of life, to be a leader. So we don't have to wait for three generations on until 3015.
I think that is the amazing thing. You know, I wanted to ask you about the interviews that you did for the book, because one of the ones that really struck me that I actually had not, even though I am a fan of the show Shark Tank, I don't remember seeing Lori Cheek on the show. But her example to me was interesting, and for those who are wondering what I'm talking about, it's in Chapter 5 of the book. If you don't have the book yet, make a note of that chapter, Weaknesses, Beware the Superwoman Syndrome. Because, you know, even in what looked like on television, a not-so-good experience, even though she did have those cryptic words for them, you will all see me again, that was a great success story. How have examples like that helped for you, at least, you know, to keep the passion alive and to be able to use for other women in particular, but also men too, to show them, look, I mean, here's a perfect example of why it's so important not to give up.
Yeah, I think the media and most TV shows and so on jump on the huge success stories. So if you're not a Mark Zuckerberg and you're not a Kevin Systrom at Instagram, or the relentless warrior, you know, the Steve Jobs and Gates, then you're not an entrepreneur. But the truth is that venture creation is a really broad platform. The largest majority of small companies do not reach the level of $1 million in revenue. Only about 6% of male-owned companies get to $1 million or more threshold of revenue a year. And women, it's 2 but rising, so it's getting closer to 3 or 4. But that's minor. You know, most people are running small businesses that are not scaling up to worldwide, you know, kinds of multinational companies. And yet they're successful. They're thriving. And for women in particular, it gives them some kind of purpose. I mean, one of the women I talked to up in Rhode Island, she was 15 years old when she started her company. She's now all of 22. And that company's making more than multi-million dollars in revenue, one of the few. And it started because she was horrified by the products that she had in her home that were cosmetics and house cleaning products that seemed to have toxic chemicals in them. So she started making pure kinds of products, and it's turned into this extraordinary company called Ava Anderson Non-Toxic. And it does come out of that passion, out of that indignation, out of that determination, as you put it, to go on. But it's start, stop, you know, fail, pick yourself up, go forward, as you say, that's both, that's something men and women both have to do to start a company.
Yeah, I think that is so true. I want to talk about it in our final part of our segment here, Joanna, talk about success, because you, as you just said, you brought up a really good point, and most of us cannot even imagine making $1 million or, of course, you know, being able to have, you know, a brand that is able to, you know, to reach, you know, that type of revenue. But I love the fact that there are people still out there trying. You discuss in the book even about success. And I think we talk about on the show all the time about how success looks differently for everyone. You know, do you think that also is a big takeaway from this is to, you know, maybe that's not your goal. Maybe you're not trying to make $1 million. But at least to be able to look at opportunities that are out there and to create opportunities. Is that part of what you hope people, and again, going back to women entrepreneurs in particular, are able to realize is possible for them?
Yeah, and that comes down to also your previous comment about how society might be changed when women have more power and when they're running more companies. So, for instance, women business owners tend to define success in a broader platform than men. I'm back to that size versus satisfaction division. Women want time for yoga. They want time for family. They want time to go off to the Rio, you know, Olympics. They want a full life. And men, because they're defining success as how by the yardstick of size, how big is the company, how much revenue, how much money am I making, have a more narrow kind of focus. Again, that tends to mitigate against women getting funding and success, because if you're not 24/7 dedicated to the company, venture capitalists think you're not really dedicated. But it's
right.
Beginning, I think, to shift. The millennials, men in the millennial generation, are more and more saying, you know what, I don't want to work 24/7. I want time for my kids. I want time for family. I want time to play tennis. And that, I think, has been something that comes out of women's experience and having an influence on the society. So, yeah, we are moving to a different definition of success. I know a lot of people who are leaving, I mean, women are leaving corporate life because they don't feel successful there, even though they're making six-figure salaries by and large. And it's because what they're giving up and the trade-offs just feel onerous and crippling and unhealthy. Arietta Huffington talks about this. I mean, one of the most successful women on the planet. And she ended up stepping back and starting this whole initiative called Thrive because she didn't feel that success being defined as how many people you know and how big your company is was feeding her heart. So feeding your heart becomes a wonderful definition of success, I guess.
Yeah. I think that is definitely it. What a great example she is, I think. And I think, again, for all of us, you know, examples like yourself, you know, show us, of course, again, the importance of remaining vigilant, optimistic, but then, of course, forging ahead. And as the research that you're able to share in the book reminds us, Joanna, that even though progress has been made, we should not be lax, we should not be complacent, we should continue to push forward. And I think in order to do that, we all have to work together, men and women have to work together to make sure that those opportunities continue to be there, because I think that's how we're all able to thrive together. Again, everyone, Joanna L. Croats has been our guest. Great conversation with you, Joanna. Really appreciate this. Being Equal Doesn't Mean Being the Same is the title of her new book, Why Behaving Like a Girl Can Change Your Life and Grow Your Business. Of course, the book is available through our friends at Amazon.com, so we definitely encourage you all to go there. Joanna, I know that you're on social media. I know because I tagged you, actually, when we were prepping for this segment, and we were able to find you there. But where's the best place for our audience to go to stay connected with you?
Womensplaybook.com, which is the company. I've been doing some podcasting as well. So womensplaybook.com. And then, you know, on Facebook, it's Joanna Croats, Women's Playbook with Joanna L. Croats. So, and as you know, on Twitter, Joanna at Joanna L. Croats. And also the book can be found at bookstores. It might take a day to get there, but you can walk into your local bookshop and find it as well.
There you go.
And
so
it's both ebook and print, which is helpful.
Exactly, for sure. Joanna, again, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. And looking forward to having you back on the show again.
I'd love to do it. I appreciate what a close reading you did of the book. It's great to hear. Thank you for taking the time.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine, and we definitely appreciate your time. And we thank your audience for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. And if you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Joanna, and you're joining us online, don't worry. Thanks to our online audience, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air and listen to it completely for free. All you have to do is go to our social media sites, facebook.com/CyrusWeb, or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. As I just mentioned, I've already tagged Joanna on both of those places to make it easy for you all to find her. Just click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free, the podcast there, and share with your friends, as you'll see with the buttons there for your own social media. For those joining us on the radio side of our program in Mississippi, check with the station WYAD to find out when the show will be re-airing for you all. Of course, for those joining us through Atlanta's 106 and also DCNowRadio.com, you can do the same thing. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take that time to enjoy some good music, as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.
Figure it out somehow, a lot of maybe when